Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court.
You may proceed.
To add kind of another wrinkle to this ECC Gordian knot, the question in our case is whether the circuit court can, just by his own order, rescind a probationer's ECC and effectively prohibit her from further earning ECC under 217703. Now, 217703 does allow the court to rescind ECC, but only on revocation and or on sending her probation to the Department of Corrections under 559036.4. There is no statutory authority that would allow the circuit court to send a probationer's ECC or to prohibit a probationer from further earning ECC. In this case, there's no question that the probationer, Ms. Long, was entitled to ECC when she was placed on probation, and in fact, in her first violation report in May of 2016, the only reason that the violation report was filed was because she was coming up on her ECC expiration date in September of that year.
Can I ask you again, what was the statutory site where the judge can rescind the ECC?
It's 217703.4, I believe, Your Honor.
And it says if you're going to revoke or send them to that long-term program, then you can rescind the ECCs. But here, the court continued your client on probation but purported to rescind the ECCs.
Correct, Your Honor. And there's no transcript of the June 2016 hearing. Certainly, probation and parole took that to mean that any ECC she had already earned was now gone, and any ECC she could earn was also now gone.
And the statute lists certain things, and it does permit her to or him to not award ECCs within the first month. At the time the person is put on probation, the court could decide your client fit within a certain category and they should not earn ECCs, but that did not happen here?
Correct, Your Honor. She pleaded guilty to property damage, and that's not one of the crimes listed under 217703.2, and certainly the respondent in his brief mentioned that section of the statute, but that wouldn't apply to this case because her crime didn't meet that and because there was no motion to not let her earn ECC in that first month. And in fact, she had earned ECC for nearly 2 years before the first violation report and the June 2016 hearing. And the June 2016 hearing, the judge just made a blanket ruling no earned compliance credit according to the docket entry. And she was not represented by counsel at that time.
Was that part of a plea agreement in this case?
It was not, Your Honor. Not that I'm aware of. I wasn't the attorney, but there's no record that this was part of a plea agreement.
And in this case, without the order, it doesn't matter whether you count notices of citation or violation reports. Even if you counted all the notices of citation, she would have earned enough ECCs to be discharged.
Correct, Your Honor, in October of 2016. And just a point of clarification on the citation violation. Citations are internal to probation and parole. They don't necessarily go before a judge. So a judge may not know a probationer has citations out there. It's only a violation report that gets filed with the court.
Is there evidence of that?
Yeah. Is that your experience? Or
that's my experience.
Okay.
The state of Missouri's?
They can't, sometimes are filed, but they're saying they're not required to be?
Correct, Your Honor. Or not that I'm aware of. It. Certainly in my experience, citations are not filed.
At least in one of these records, they were, in fact. I mean, the court's docket entries show that they were filed.
With the court itself? Mm-hmm. I'm not aware in our case that citations were filed, but violations were filed. One violation was filed
right.
In our case. When the circuit court extended her probation a year and continued on probation in 2016, it wasn't until over a year later in December 2017 that a second violation report was filed. But by that time, under 217703, she had already earned enough credits to have expired off probation in October of 2016.
A year earlier?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so what's opposing counsel's argument why that it was appropriate she not be given ECCs and not be released from probation?
Well, similar to the previous case, I believe the respondent is going to rely on 595 or 559105 to say that the court can't release Ms. Long from probation, that she has to serve the maximum term of her probation. However, 555-105 doesn't define what a maximum term of probation is. That's found under 555-016. And then there, the maximum term of probation is defined in Section 1. It says, unless modified by 217-703, the maximum term of probation would be 5 years for a felony with an possible extension up to 6. So,
And what is that cross-reference to?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
So is the maximum term 5 years? What is the cross-reference? You said unless?
Unless modified by 217-703.
So it makes a specific reference as the maximum term unless modified by the ECCs?
Correct, Your Honor. So if using the harmony argument, if you harmonize all the statutes, 559-105, the maximum term would be modified by 217-703 under 555 or 559-016, correct? I'm sorry. So that would be my anticipated argument for the respondent to make, would be the 559-105.
When you say the case is about rescission, what you're trying to say, I think, is as to whether or not she gets released based on the ECCs, or does she stay under supervision for some longer period of time because of the effect of 559-105?
Well, even if 559-105 were to apply in this case, there would still have to be some mechanism by the court to order her to serve the maximum term of probation if it's the 5 years by this court. And the only way to do that would be...
At a minimum, it would be what the court's already ordered, the full amount, the 3 plus in your client's case 1.
Correct, modified by 217-703.
Well, that's what we're here talking about. But at a minimum... The judge wouldn't have to do anything if it was the extent of the previously ordered probation term.
Correct, Your Honor. And the circuit judge in this case used 559-016.2, and when he ordered a specific term of 3 years of probation. And in that subdivision of that section, it is also says unless modified by 217-703.
So you're saying it says we have to consider ECCs in figuring out what the maximum term of probation is because the statute refers us to that section?
The plain language of the statute specifically refers to the ECC statute. Yes, Your Honor.
But here you have a separate thing. You're referring to rescission because unusually here the trial court at some point purported to take away all her ECCs, but there's certain statutory situations in which you can do that, and this wasn't one. So is that right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So say the court had not done that, and the ECCs had stayed in and accumulated, but the court thought you disagreed with your maximum term of probation argument. When would she have been entitled to probation?
That I would have to calculate because she would have continued to earn compliance credits.
Right. And she wouldn't have had the earlier ones taken away because she was never revoked.
Correct. And in my initial motion for discharge that I filed with the circuit court, she would have expired no later than February of 2017 just based on the earned compliance credits.
That's what I'm asking, yeah.
Correct, up to the June 2016. However, after the June 2016, she would have started earning earned compliance credits again in July and then expired off in October.
What's the amount of time she actually served up to the time when you say she should have been?
Just about 3 years, Your Honor. Just to kind of backtrack a little bit, the circuit court would have had to have had some kind of hearing or a motion to revoke address before 555 or 559-105 would have even been able to be applied. And you would have to file or find under 559-036 that would have to be some manifestation that she was either going to be revoked to have the hearing, and in this case there wasn't. As I previously said, she discharged off in October 2016, and another violation report wasn't filed until December 2017. There were some hearings, and then I was appointed to represent her in March of 2018, and then that's when I filed my motion for discharge. I believe that's my arguments, Your Honor. I'll just...
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. This case is not about calculation or how to calculate earned compliance credits or when they accrued. This case is simply about harmonization, multiple statutes and a constitutional provision. And if I can, I'd like to just kind of try to set that out and in doing so, address questions raised in the previous arguments by Judges Stith, Breckenridge, and Powell that I think are all instructive for us here. So what we have is we have an overarching constitutional provision that says crime victims have a right to restitution. That is unequivocal. There's a right to restitution, and the Constitution also says that the manner of which that shall have or happen shall be determined by the legislature. So what the legislature has done, it has passed a series of statutes relating to crime victim restitution and the collection of restitution. And the question came up earlier, how's that to go about? Is probation really the best way? Doesn't matter if it's the best way, that's a policy decision. It is the legal way. It is the method in which the legislature has determined that crime victims will be entitled to restitution.
Well, actually, no one claimed it was addressed whether or not it was the best way, and I think we all thought it was a good way. The question is, are you constitutionally required to not let someone out on probation until they pay restitution, or does it, as you know, give to the legislature the determination of different ways in which to effectuate the constitutional right to restitution?
Yes, Your Honor, and if I can, I'm going to get to that, and because I think you had a good question earlier that I think is instructive here. So we have that overarching constitutional provision. We then have the Earned Compliance Credit Statute, 217.703, which sets out in certain crimes a defendant is not entitled to earn compliance credits, and then in all the other crimes they are entitled to earn compliance credits, and it sets out a procedure for how those are accrued and when they apply and how they can be rescinded and how they can be suspended and so on and so forth. And I'll apologize to opposing counsel and to this court. Opposing counsel correctly pointed out that in my brief I mistakenly cited 217.703.2. It should have been 217.703.5, which is nearly identical language and sets out the procedure for which a circuit court can rescind earned compliance credits in all cases. So I do make that apology and thank him for pointing that out. So we have that statute which talks about how those credits are calculated. And that goes to Judge Powell's question from two cases ago, is that a judge function or a probation function? That's a probation function. That's an administrative function. Judges don't sit around, that I know of, and calculate earned compliance credits for fun. I think they rely in large part on the probation officer's report, and that's an administrative function that probation officers perform. That is a completely different distinction from the application of the credits in a certain situation. And this goes to Judge Stith's question about what is the maximum term, what does that mean? 559.036 says the maximum term of probation shall be as it is defined in 559.116. So we look to 559.116 and it sets out the terms of probation for different classes of offenses. For felonies, it's 5 years, and it can be extended, not shall, but may be extended upon discretion by the trial judge for an additional year. So that is your default position. However, that statute is further modified, even though it says at the beginning of the statute, the maximum term shall be unless modified by 217.703, which gives rise to brings us back to the earned compliance credit statute, which for almost every type of special condition of probation, such as court costs, community service, urinalysis tests, whatever, that's going to be modifiable. The one single condition in which it cannot be modified is the completion of crime victim restitution.
And how do we know that?
Because 559.105 clearly and unequivocally states that a court may not release an individual from probation until restitution is completed. That does not mean that the probationer cannot keep accruing the credits. That does not mean that the probationer must be revoked. It simply means they can't be released until the maximum term.
It doesn't mean they can keep
them. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they can't keep them after 5 years, right? Or 6 years.
I would agree with that.
So if
of course, it's an SIS revoked to an SES, which allows for another term.
But once you've termed with it, You can't, it doesn't let you keep them in prison after whatever term of probation.
Well, they're not in prison. They're on probation.
Or in probation.
But I agree wholeheartedly.
Thank you.
But that is a completely different analysis than whether or not they can be released.
And tell me again, under the statute, why you think it makes an exception for that when it
because
says 559, subject to 703?
Yes, ma'am. 559.105 explicitly states that an individual may not be released from probation until crime victim restitution is complete. That is the manifestation of the legislature's intent to enforce crime victims' rights.
There's an inherent limit that they have to release them if the probation
absolutely.
Has not. So if the probation has
they don't
has
have
been
to revoke them prior to that. They just can't release them.
But they can't keep them past the maximum term of
correct.
Probation.
Absolutely.
So if the maximum term of probation is reduced by 703 to by ECCs, then they can't. Why doesn't it mean they can't keep them?
Because crime victim restitution is the only condition in which the ECCs can't be cashed in.
Well, why not? That's
until
what I'm
restitution
asking.
Is completed.
I mean, under the new statute, I understand your point. Under the old statute, I'm unclear if that differentiation is made by the statutes or you think that's just a logical one.
No, the new statute did not change the law. The new statute clarified the law. The law always was 217.703 is the procedure for how credits are accrued, and then 559.105 is the backstop saying this doesn't matter as it relates to restitution. You can keep accruing the credits, you just can't cash them in unless you pay restitution prior to the maximum date.
Does 116, just to clarify so I understand, does 116's reference to 703, isn't that part of the definition of maximum term of probation and therefore you're not making it part of the definition?
559.116 defines the maximum term as a term of years unless modified by 217.
That's part of the definition of maximum term is unless modified. So
right.
If 703 applies,
what
the maximum
has to be,
term is still less.
From a harmonization standpoint, you then have to read in to that litany, you have to read in 559.105 and Article 1, Section 32 of the Missouri Constitution, which says unequivocally, crime victims have a right to restitution. Here's the method the legislature has chosen. No one shall be released from probation until restitution is complete.
The Constitution doesn't say that.
No, but when you read everything together in harmonization, that's the only logical conclusion that can be come to.
Mr. Lambert, how do you play into the fact that maybe the defendant doesn't have the ability to pay restitution, but they're entitled to be released because of ECCs?
If there were an analysis relating to a willful ability to pay, which I don't believe there's any case law addressing restitution payment other than as it might exist in other areas such as child support or something like that. We're talking about strictly crime victim restitution. I don't think there's any case law on that type of analysis in Missouri yet. But this goes to Judge Breckenridge's question too, which I wanted to get to. Again, the distinction is not a revocation proceeding. Okay, that arguably could be an analysis if the state sought to revoke someone for non-payment of restitution. Mm-hmm. That question is not before the court today. The only question before the court today is whether or not the trial court even has the authority to release someone from probation prior to the maximum term authorized by law unless restitution is complete. And that goes to Judge Breckenridge's question on release versus revocation. You had cited the United States Supreme Court decision talking about that analysis. Again, that may be for a different day. That's not the question that's before this court today.
It is the question if the only reason this person is continued is because they couldn't afford to pay. That's exactly what we said in Fleming. You can't do without a hearing showing whether it was willful or whether whether it was willful they did not pay versus they simply could not pay. And here the person paid almost everything and paid according to the schedule, if I recall correctly.
In the instant case?
Right.
I don't believe that's the case, Your Honor.
They made, if this is not...
At least as respects to restitution, I don't know about the court costs.
Well, in our case, the earlier case said court costs are not... that we don't imprison people for debt. So you've got to show that they have the ability to pay.
I agree. And there's not even a hint of incarceration at this point, other than the potential should there be some violation of something somewhere down the line. This is a suspended imposition of sentence right now. The issue, although it seems like there are a myriad of issues here on calculation and so forth, It's really a very simple analysis. A person is not allowed to be released from probation unless their crime victim restitution is complete. Nothing needs to be decided or addressed as it relates to costs. Nothing needs to be decided or addressed as it relates to any other special condition. Restitution is distinct. It is special. It is special in the Constitution. It is special with 559.105. It is special for a reason. And that's why that's the only issue before the court today.
Is there any magic to the words in the statute, the term released from probation? Because you were talking about when the term ended and if the judge is acting on the ECCs. And a judge acts to release from probation on the ECCs, or does it just be released as a matter of law at the end of a term of probation or when ECCs are accrued?
Yes. I think that it is an application of law. I don't know that the judge would have to do anything differently than they would otherwise do, but they can't do anything affirmatively. They can't discharge someone from probation. The law can't allow someone to be discharged from probation unless crime victim restitution is complete. Again, that doesn't mean that they can't keep accruing those earned compliance credits. And the sooner they get the restitution paid off, the sooner they can cash those in.
So what about Parrott versus Martinez, where the defendant sought to be discharged from probation because she thought she had earned enough ECCs and was disabled and not able to pay as found by the court?
Yes. Parrott versus Martinez is distinguishable in a couple different ways. Number one, in that case, the victim passed away. And as I recall in the recitation of facts in the opinion, the defendant was relieved of the obligation to pay restitution by the court. So restitution was not even an issue at the time of the appellate decision in Parrott versus Martinez. That had been dealt with. Now, Parrott does go on in great dicta to talk about philosophies behind whether or not somebody should or shouldn't be ultimately discharged from probation or kept or revoked or so on and so forth. But if to the extent restitution is a moot issue because they were discharged, Parrott doesn't address that. It talked about these other conditions. To the extent from an argument standpoint as to whether the same principles apply, again, it goes back to the fact that Parrott did not analyze 559.105. It didn't even address it. It didn't acknowledge it. It didn't analyze, address, or acknowledge Article 1, Section 32 of the Missouri Constitution. So those things are absent from Parrott. To the extent that it is held up as an argument in support of release, it is an incomplete analysis from a legal standpoint.
And it was court costs, restitution of court costs, I think, in Parrott.
Court costs, because restitution was relieved, the defendant was relieved from the restitution condition prior to the motion to revoke or whatever it was that brought the case before the court. I would also point out that in Strasser v. Martinez, this court addressed a different related issue as it relates to earned compliance credits, not restitution, but it did in footnote 5 forecast this very issue. And it acknowledges that the change of 559.105 means something, which is distinguishable from the change in 217.703, which merely clarified the existing law as under 559.105.
Counsel, can you please address opposing counsel's point that the trial court here purported to say no ECCs in the order, but didn't fall into any of the categories in which that's permitted?
Because that would have been done if you read the entirety of the statute. This is where I made the mistake in the citation. It's subsection 5 under the entire
217.703, why would that,
which allows
that?
A court upon the filing of a violation report or a motion to revoke by the prosecutor to conduct a hearing, and if the court finds it's appropriate or the probationer is in need of more guidance and that would benefit from the term probation, it may rescind the earned compliance credits.
Rescind all prior credits, and can it prohibit them from accruing in the
future? I think under that statute it can rescind the prior credits. I don't think that applies to the accrual of new credits. But again, that is somewhat of a red herring issue, because that's a good procedural thing to know and to be aware of from an educational standpoint, but it is not dispositive of the question before the court, which is, was restitution complete? If not, it really doesn't matter how many earned compliance credits were accrued, it just can't be applied.
If we agree with you, it doesn't. If we don't agree with all your arguments, it may. So it's useful to have your interpretation.
Yes, ma'am.
What's the distinction in the practice of probation and parole regarding notice citation versus violation reports?
Going back to the first case,
or it's been argued here that the notice of citations are not traditionally filed in the file, where in the first case they were. But
I agree with counsel that is my experience and practice that those don't always, if even routinely, show up in the file. The judge and the prosecutor often not aware that those have even occurred.
Practice, they aren't equivalent.
I don't know that I would say they don't have the equivalent effect. They don't have the equivalent knowledge of all the relevant people who probably should have knowledge of it.
Well, but you're talking about probation telling themselves whether or not it counts. And we aren't aware of any case here today where probation and parole didn't consider a notice and citation
Correct.
As an initial report concerning a violation.
Correct.
So to the extent that they're telling themselves how they read it,
right,
they're reading them as one and the same. It may not be what how the judge reads it, and oftentimes the judge doesn't even see those.
I would agree with that.
Counsel, before you sit down, you're relying on 217.703.5? Is that right? But that says just, as I read it, just what opposing counsel says, which is that they don't accrue during the month when a violation is filed, shall be suspended pending the outcome of a hearing if one is held. All earned credits shall be rescinded if the court or board revokes the probation or parole or places the offender in a department program under subsection 4, which didn't occur here. So that's the question is under what authority? Maybe there's a different subsection yet. That's what I want to find out.
It says if a hearing is held, all credits shall be rescinded if the offender, subsection 2, if the offender is found by the court or board to be ineligible.
That's not the section I'm reading here.
Okay,
so what statute
sorry,
are you reading?
That was the section I was citing.
Yeah, no, I'm reading sub 5, though. So what are you reading?
I'm reading sub 5, paragraph 2. Which one?
217.703. What?
0.5.
Get what version? What year's version are you reading?
August 2018 effective.
Okay. Well, that may be the new statute, perhaps, but 17 statute is what I'm reading, and it says what opposing counsel is reading it to say.
Okay.
There may be some other section. I just want to make sure I'm looking at the right one.
I won't dispute that if I got the wrong statute from you, but I would say this. It's irrelevant because we can go off on tangents about the calculation of accrual. That's really not the point. That's for another day. The point is today, unless and until restitution is completed, all these credits that keep accruing with the math that we're talking about and trying to figure out, that's an analysis for a different day. The only question today is whether or not
it depends on what's included in maximum period of probation, and that'll be for the court to decide.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I believe the court already addressed this. The statute as it read at the time that the probation hearing was held, there was no way to rescind credits short of revocation or placement to a department program under 555 or 559036. The only reason that Ms. Long was not expired off probation in October of 2016 was that PMP took the circuit court's mention of no earned compliance credits in June 2016 as meaning she completely lost all her earned compliance credits. Circuit Court made no mention of 559015 either at that time that I'm aware of or when he initially denied my motion for discharge. In fact, the only reason he denied my motion for discharge was because he followed probation and paroles.
He thought there were no credits earned.
Correct. While that may be an administrative function, certainly the Circuit Court also has jurisdiction over the probationer, and at that point, they're still bound by 217703, just like probation and parole is. And in subsection 7 of 217703, it clearly states that the court shall release a probationer once time of probation plus earned compliance credits have been met. And in this case, it has. 559105 just simply doesn't apply in this case. First, because it was never an issue until opposing counsel brought it up. And second, because maximum term of probation is still in 559016. And in there, the plain language of that statute says, unless modified by 217703. In fact, that's the first line of that statute, unless modified by 217703. A term of probation for a felony shall not be less than a year or more than 5 years.
What you just said was that the reliance on 559105 was raised for the first time on appeal?
Correct, Your Honor.
But again, this is a writ setting, is that correct? And we have to find the trial court abused its discretion, is that correct?
Correct.
And the probation and parole, right or wrong, told the judge that the earned compliance credit had been rescinded or they weren't there. Is that fair?
Correct. But the court still abused its discretion when it denied my motion for discharge based on 217703. The court still has the ability to look at the statute and apply the statute.
But did probation and parole change their view after you filed your motion?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
But it showed no credits, and yet none of the conditions for awarding no credits were there. It did it based on the court's incorrect order.
For what I know, it was just based on the circuit court saying no earned compliance credits in its docket entry. And again, there were no transcripts of the hearing, but that's how probation and parole took it. Because in the December 2017 probation violation, and again, and I believe in the March or February 2018, it mentioned that she was not earning earned compliance credit due to the court.
And it was a reported violation that she had not complied with the order of restitution?
The first violation, the only violation, was that she hadn't complied.
But the one that brought her to
How do we know that the probation and parole wasn't relying on 559.105 for their position that ECCs don't acquire when there's an outstanding restitution?
We don't, Your Honor.
Well, there's no statute that says they don't accrue. The question is if you can release them, as we've said.
Correct. And there's nothing in 217703 that says that ECC works as cashing it in or banking them and then you can apply them. It clearly states that you start earning them the first month that you can and that they reduce the term of probation by 30 days for each month in compliance. Thank you, Your Honors.